From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. I'm Sam Zeff. For a time, it looked like the legislative session was going to stretch, well, for a long time. Lawmakers couldn't agree on a tax plan that would cover the deficit and add new money into education. Fact is, there's still some question about that right now. But right when it appeared the impasse was at its worst, the Women's Caucus stepped up with a plan that led to a compromise. Three members of that caucus are with me today, and they'll introduce themselves now.
Hi, I'm Cindy Holscher out of District 16, Overland Park, Kansas.
Stephanie Clayton out of District 19, Leawood, Prairie Village, and Overland Park.
I'm Monica Murnan. I represent District 3, which is the Pittsburgh area.
That's Pittsburgh in southeast Kansas, which is why she is not in the studio enjoying donuts and coffee with us this morning. Now, before we get to legislative stuff, and Lord knows, even though you guys have left for the session, there's still plenty of stuff to talk about. But before we get to any of that, I want to hear about one cool thing each one of you are doing this summer. Cindy, I'll start with you.
Well, I took a nap the other day. Just to get caught up a little bit and a little re-energized. But, you know, we haven't made a whole lot of plans because of the potential of a special session in July. So
nap, coolest thing so far, yeah. Stephanie?
I went to the pool with my kids. It was great. I also napped.
Monica, down there in Pittsburgh, anything more fun going on down there for you?
Just going back to my real job.
Which is what, by the way?
I work with special ed kids ages 0 to 3 in a 16-county area down here in southeast Kansas.
That's right. I remember now. So before we get to some of the issues, somebody tell me about the Women's Caucus. I have to say it's not something you hear too much about. It seems to be sort of a loosely organized thing. So somebody tell me about it.
Well, let's see. I guess I would say it's about a month ago now. I was driving into work one morning and Cindy called me. And she said, you know, we should really start getting some of the women together to talk. And this was, you know, primarily just to visit about legislative issues in general. But our conversations naturally centered around tax because that was the big issue that deadlocked us.
So you call Cindy, you call Stephanie, and this is born out of what? Things are in neutral. The legislature can't seem to get things going. Where did this come from?
We had kind of gotten to the point in the legislature, as typically happens every year, where people are starting to back into their corners. And people are getting a little angry and a little frustrated. Maybe things aren't moving the way they wanted. And that's kind of where we were. And at that point, people weren't communicating with each other. And in my experience, when people stop communicating, things go downhill pretty quickly. So the idea was, let's get people together so we're communicating, we're on the same page as we're trying to move forward and craft legislation.
Yeah. Let me just say, I hope there's not a men's caucus. I don't mean to be disloyal to my gender, but if there's a men's caucus, then there's some other issues going on there. So let me ask you this. I think when we talked on the House floor during the debate, the three of us who are in the room, Cindy and Stephanie and I, that there seemed, I think you hinted that when you first got together, there wasn't really a plan to come up with a crafted piece of legislation. Is that true?
Yes, it's absolutely true. It was just a group of like-minded, you know, moderate and Democratic members of the House just discussing issues at the time. I mean, we spent at least a week meeting just talking about things in general.
We started meeting every day pretty much after first adjournment, just to kind of talk about what was going on, to talk about what we were hearing and what direction things were moving in. But then something very interesting happened, and that was the vote on SB 30 on that Tuesday evening.
Which is one of the tax bills.
Yeah. And that one was kind of anticipated to get passed, but it didn't. So that next morning, we had our caucus meeting, and Stephanie had an appointment. I facilitated the group. And, you know, that was a pretty critical juncture where people were a little bit angry, a little bit testy about where things were in the process, and some people were getting a little bit panicky, too. So, honestly, we took that session just to kind of talk about why people did vote for the bill and why certain people didn't, and offering those perspectives as far as what was lacking there and what was missing. Why didn't we have everybody on board? And, you know, there were some very compelling reasons as far as why some people did not vote for that bill that night. So we kind of did this cleansing, I'll say, where we talked about, you know, what went wrong there. And I remember when we got ready to leave, I just told everybody, I said, okay, go to lunch, step out of this building, do a little healing, and come back. And when they came back that afternoon, I told them to bring a piece of paper with three things written down of what they felt had to be in a tax plan. And they all came back. And I give them huge credit for that. It's not easy to move that fast through a process sometimes, but they all came back. And that's really where Monica stepped in, too, as far as capturing that information from everybody as far as what they felt had to be there. And no, we did not intend to craft a tax plan, but that's just kind of what happened after we'd been meeting a while. We had this huge moment happen where we had an issue that needed some attention.
Yeah, it would seem to me, and I want to ask Monica about what her three things were in a second, but it seemed to me that when SB 30 went down, passed in the Senate pretty handily,
right,
actually, and then went down in the House. And I think that was a surprise to everybody, that at that point it seemed like this session may never end, because that seemed, you know, it was a bill that was very similar to other legislation that had come through. Monica, take me back to that room that we've been speaking about, where the meeting was, and I want to know what were the three things that you thought needed to be in the tax plan, and then talk to me a little bit about what you think the consensus was coming out of that meeting. What had to be in a tax plan that got both moderate and conservative Republican support and Democratic support from your caucus?
Right. One of the things that I want to make sure we're clear on here is, you know, we were dealing with a vocabulary problem, is the way I saw it, because it became really obvious to me in my own caucus, the Democratic caucus, that, you know, there was an assumption that, you know, Democrats maybe were slowing the process down, or maybe they were, you know, wishful thinking or whatever there was. But really what it came down to after listening to people is everybody had a different definition of fix it. Fix it meant something different to everybody. And the people that were engaged in the conversation all had the intention to fix it, define fix and define it. And so that's what we really, you know, had to get down to. So when we were in those rooms and people were just talking and saying, well, I've heard this or I've heard that, you know, I started hearing threads of consensus. And whenever you're dealing with a big group of people, whether it's in a corporate setting or a school setting or, you know, a bunch of kids trying to get them to decide, you know, where they're going to go eat, you got to find some strands of consensus to build upon. The things that were just beyond consensus that everybody agreed on, we had to stop the big three, the LLC loophole, the ratchet, and we had to add back a third tax bracket. Where we started flailing was on the periphery. And so as people started talking, you know, I just kind of kept hearing that we needed some more definitions to have a common vocabulary. And so that's when people said, we wrote down everybody's thoughts on, you know, brought, I think for the first time, a flip chart into the Capitol, which seems odd to me, but flip chart paper and markers, and started writing things on the wall saying, you know, what is important to you? And after we came up with this huge list, we saw more threads. And then as we continued, it became obvious that all of us needed a little more education on the facts. And so that's where when we brought in the Tom Sawyers of the world and the Stephen Johnsons and say, educate us. Because why would we fall on our sword for saying this is going to hurt middle class folks if we weren't real clear how many more dollars this was going to impact somebody in the $40,000 range? So the important thing, I think, here is, you know, that it's continuing education that we brought in. In the end, we had our must-haves, and those, of course, were the three big things. We were really worried about folks in the low-income bracket falling off the tax cliff, as they call it. And we were really, really sure that we needed around $600 million to be able to achieve the things that were important to people. So those were the big items. For me, I was very, very interested in the food sales tax rebate. I was also very interested in the homestead renters. Those were two of my top priorities, and they didn't get in the plan. And that's totally okay. We'll come back again and do that. But everybody got the chance to speak, and I think everybody got the chance to be educated, and that's what made a difference.
What was the reaction? And you you mentioned Representative Steve Johnson. He's chairman of the tax committee. And he was pretty roundly praised for how he handled the issue this year. What was his reaction coming into the Women's Caucus, and you've got paper hung up on the wall and markers, and you've got lists, and you've narrowed it down, and then you invite him in, and he reacts how, Stephanie?
You know, honestly, it was wonderful to see the way that he reacted, because Steve loves tax policy. There's a reason why he's the chair. This is something that fascinates him, and he is so well suited for that role. And so he looked and he said, I wish we could always do it this way. Now, obviously, the size of the tax committee, it's one of the largest committees in the House. It's not easy, and I really don't think you would really be able to do things that way in committee. But Steve was positive, open, kind, free with knowledge, and he experienced no small amount of backlash for it. And I think that
backlash from who?
I would rather not say. That's water under the bridge, but it is worth noting that Steve was good and kind and open and willing to share his knowledge, even if it might have given him a little bit of trouble. I cannot say enough about his good character. Which, by the way, I still have the tax plan on my dining room table. My daughter was getting ready to throw it away, and then my husband was like, oh my gosh, wait, that's the tax plan. You can't. So
no, that's history right there.
Yeah, no, it's still
someday,
there.
Someday the archives are going to want that. Let me ask you this. So was there anybody in leadership in these women's caucus meetings? I mean, there's really only Susan Weigel, president of the Senate, is in leadership. There's certainly women who are committee chairman and other smaller leadership roles. But as you're marking up the bill on the wall, are there women in leadership in the room?
We had there were some women who were vice chairs, and I think some of the women were ranking minority members on some committees.
Right.
But I would say that largely, and this was, primarily the people that were in this group were women who were open to a three-tier plan. So that's not all women, and we need to address that. So it's most women, but not all. And so the women who were in that room, and well, granted, I guess we only have two female committee chairs in the entire 125. Yeah, there's social services budget and local government. So right. Those are our only two female committee chairs. And they tended to track a little bit more towards a two-tier plan. And so largely,
you're speaking about in the House, right?
Yes, in the House.
Because there are a couple of women who are committee chairs in the Senate.
But this was primarily House, again, because we did end up bringing in senators later. We brought in men. We brought in men who were in leadership. But as far as the initial group, the women who were hashing out the tax plan, you had a couple of vice chairs, a couple of ranking minority members. But largely, and I hate to say this because I don't like to sound as if I'm insulting my colleagues here, but that plan was crafted by basically some of the least powerful members of the House. And we got together and we listened to each other and we sought education and we figured out a way to start us on the path to get out of there.
So, of course, if it starts with the least powerful members of the legislature, it eventually has to percolate up to the most powerful members of the legislature. And so tell me how leadership reacted when this plan was presented to
them.
Well,
we invited them in.
Invited them in, you invited Don Heineman, the House Majority Leader, Ron Reichman, the Speaker of the House. You invited them in?
We invited Jim Ward, right. Minority Leader, and Don Heineman came in particular kind of as we got to the point where we're like, we have a plan. So they came and we presented to them. And, probably the best thing that happened as a part of this process And I think Stephen Johnson was probably very appreciative of this and told me, he's like, you know, you've got 30 people here now that can talk tax policy, all on the same page, all ready to support something. And sometimes that's hard to do as far as to be able to get that cohesive of a group that agrees on something. So that was a good starting point to have that large of a group able to talk tax policy and very supportive of something that had been put together. But yes, so we invited people in. We kept broadening our group, inviting leadership. And then came the day when things were kind of stalled. And that was when the combined budget and school finance bill was introduced. Mm. So we just kind of waited. Interestingly, of course, it went down. A lot of people have been told, this is your last chance. This is what we're doing. We're doing this combined bill. But people knew there was something else out there. And like I said, to me, that was a huge victory in that respect, because we didn't settle for a bill that, in my opinion, had some issues. People knew something else was coming that would be better, and we did get to that.
I mentioned earlier that there are more women in the legislature this year than there were last year, seven more. I think 28% of the legislature is are women this year, a little bit above the national average. And I want to hear from all of you, and Cindy, I'll start with you. Do you think that that added to the comity, to the compromise, the ability to get people into a room and hash this thing out?
Well, yes, to that point. And, you know, I will say many of us here in the Johnson County area that were elected, I mean, we're pretty united in the respect that we're there to fix things. And like I said, that was part of the beauty of it, that we had reasonable people who wanted to understand, who wanted to make sure that a plan was put together that was good for their district. And that's a great thing when you have your representative who really is reflecting back and thinking, will this be good for my people?
Mm. Monica, more women, better legislature?
You know, I'm not so sure about that. I think my observation has been the folks that were newly elected this time were folks that were pretty up to speed on content. And I think any time you have folks that understand content, you're going to have better policy come out. And so I really think there are just a lot of people, a lot of really good people, who were seriously concerned about the status of the state of Kansas and were willing to do the hard work to fix it.
Stephanie, your thoughts on more women, better legislature?
I don't know if I can necessarily apply this to gender, and I'm not trying to say this in like an, oh, I'm a good Republican woman, I don't do identity politics kind of way. I think, did we start from a point where we had a small group that was likely to respect each other, let each other listen, a group that was leaderless in many ways, which I think is very important? Yes, because, I mean, honestly, it was just you convene a group together, you let people talk, you listen to people. Perhaps we started off that way, but as we started bringing more people in, I would say that there are many wonderful men that we work with that were, again, passionate about the reason why they got elected or reelected, and open to learning and looking for that opportunity to be heard as opposed to being herded. And so often, I mean, you see people looking for different voting blocks, right? Like, oh, I will control and command this block, and then I will be the leader of this voting block, and I'll be the most powerful person, blah, blah, blah. But in that process, the block isn't being treated as individuals. And I mean, I think it's uniquely American. We're all very, very individualistic in the legislature. And I think an authoritarian approach will never get any of us out of there. It may have in the past, but I, for one, am glad to see those days of, you know, the midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning call of the House and threats to sort of be going by the wayside. And I prefer this collaborative approach where other lawmakers are treated as equals and with respect.
And gender aside, this was a bipartisan group. And that was the goal, to have people coming together, working together, you know, crafting a plan, doing whatever to essentially make sure we're moving forward.
When you come back either in January or maybe July, and we'll talk about that a little bit, is the Women's Caucus going to be a more formal thing? Is it going to keep going? Are you guys going to keep meeting? Or is this something that you will convene when there is absolute need to move stuff through the pipeline?
Well, I would say that you know, first of all, towards the end, we stopped calling it Women's Caucus. We called it Bipartisan Caucus because there were lots, again, there were lots of wonderful men who cared about the same things that we did that joined us and also are co-equal legislators. You know, we don't want to put ourselves up in a superior way that joined us. Now, one thing that I will say is that bipartisanship is rare and becoming rarer by the moment. It's politically dangerous. You can get in trouble for hanging out with, quote, the wrong kind. It doesn't always make things easy, but it is necessary in order to get compromise out of there. So I would say that, you know, that yes, bipartisan caucus should totally hang out and continue to do so as we move on, whether that's education policy, more tax reform, budgetary issues, whatever else seems to be coming up. Because again, start with respect, start with listening, and you'll be amazed at the things that you can come up with.
I want to look forward here and start with you, Monica, and ask whether or not you think we're going to be back in a special session once the Supreme Court gets its pause on the school finance reform, the school finance formula that was passed. Do you think that's going to pass constitutional muster, and are you prepared to be back in July?
I think if I knew the answer to that, there would be a lot of people who would really think I was smart. My gut feeling is that I'm concerned about the adequacy component. I'm concerned that we're well below where we probably need to be on the per-pupil base aid. So I think the equity component of it is fine. I feel confident in that. As a school administrator, I feel confident and comfortable in the equity piece. The adequacy is still a concern. If we come back, absolutely, I'll be in the chair and be there ready to go. And my guess is this bipartisan group will quickly come back together because, quite frankly, it's the only way that we're going to get Kansas back on track. And I think people know that. And I think that they are willing to take the risk that is involved in working with different groups to do it.
Yeah. Cindy Holsch.
I was going to say the bipartisanship is continuing in the respect that this was something some of the freshmen and I from Johnson County tried to work out earlier. We were planning to take a road trip out to Garden City. So this is myself as well as some other legislators, freshmen in the area. We're going to get in a car, drive to Garden City, see what's going on out there, because it seems like every time I turn on the radio, I'm hearing about what's happening there as far as their economic development. So we're going to go check that out. We wanted to do it on our three-week break, but of course, on that break, everybody's time became scarce. We didn't make it happen. But I think this, you know, that will be another opportunity for us in a car, driving to talk, continue the bipartisanship, continue, you know, just working together. That's what it's about. So, yeah, there will still be things happening in that regard. And there's a lot of energy on this. And Monica's absolutely right. That's really the only way you solve the problems coming together.
Yeah. Where are you on this school finance issue? Have you put off any vacation plans, bought trip insurance, whatever you've had to do to prepare for a possible special session? Do you think that you're going to be back?
You know, I hear Topeka is lovely in the summer.
It is it's beautiful in the summer, and I urge you to go to the Topeka Zoo. Stephanie Clayton, you ready to go back in July? What do you think is going to happen?
I have prepared to go back in July. You know, I'm looking at my children who are back there with Matt, who is a paragon of virtue and patience. And I'm thinking, boy, I'm sure they'd love to spend their summer vacation at Camp KS Ledge. It's not the first time I've had to bring them, and it likely won't be the last.
Outstanding. We're going to leave it there. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you like to do that sort of thing. If you have the NPR One app, search for us in Explore, and don't forget to click subscribe. You can also find us at kcur.org/statehouseblend. Are you a fan of the Twitter? If you're listening to this, I'll bet you are. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. And my co-host, Brian Ellison, who keeps track of the Michigoss over there in Missouri on Statehouse Blend, Missouri, is at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.